The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions. Unfiltered
opinions. I'm Jimmy Moya.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Good morning. Welcome back. We've missed you guys so much. We do apologize, of course, for going MIA, but Simon and I had to both travel, and doing the show would have been a logistical impossibility. Nevertheless, we are back. We are nameless this week because, well, I don't know, actually. I suppose we just didn't get asked what our names are. Apparently those aren't important in the times that we live in. Names don't matter anymore. But welcome back. We're going to be taking a look at some market movements in the time that we've been away. We're going to be diving into the big, beautiful bill in our deep dive. And we're going to be adding something quite interesting to our wall that Simon and I didn't even realize you could have as a stock. So stick around for that. Stick around for the show. Shout out to our TikTok community. Good morning, guys. We have missed you. We're back. We'll try not to disappear on you again, but we can't make any promises with the cold weather. Simon doesn't enjoy the cold. Good morning. Good morning, Chloe. Lovely to see you on the chat. If you are joining us for the first time, like, subscribe, follow, do those things, do those nice things. Otherwise, you're the one missing out, really. We do this every week for your viewing pleasure, and we try to make it as entertaining as possible. Before we kick things off, before we get into market matters, let's address some important matters of international security. I'm just going to move my laptop ever so slightly so that everybody can see exactly who the champions of the world are. FIFA Club World Champions. Yes, Simon.
FIFA Club
World Champions. All the clubs in the world.
Okay.
We'll completely ignore the fact that in our winning celebration, President Trump insisted on being there. Orange Mussolini was never invited, but
yeah, I know nothing about this. I'll take your word. Yeah, yeah.
So the FIFA Club World Cup took place. It was almost a preamble to the main World Cup that takes place next year in the US. Now, there have been obviously some speculations around that because with all of the bans that Trump has been imposing on non-American citizens and things, you're like, but does that mean half the world can't play? So apparently the bans don't apply to sporting individuals in some parts, but the FIFA Club World Cup was taking place this over the last month and a bit or so. And all of the clubs from around the world, Mamelodi Sundowns was there, PSG was there, Real Madrid was there. So pretty much all the clubs represented across most of the major sporting or most of the major soccer areas.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a club
World
Cup.
And
then
how often does this happen?
I think once every 4 years. Yeah, once every 4 years, much like the World Cup.
Okay, so this is the whole like Real McCoy, like
the Bank of America was sponsoring it. No, it wasn't South Africa.
No, but we have clubs.
Yeah, we only had one club there. We only had Mamelodi Sundowns there. They didn't make it beyond the group stages, but just to be in the Club World Cup was, I think, almost.
Do we have to win Africa or do we win South Africa and get invited in?
So you win South Africa.
Okay,
and then I think they check based on they allocate a certain number of countries
per
continent or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And in the case of Mamelodi Sundowns, they have won, I think they've won the local Premier League for the last 8 seasons in a row. So that was pretty much a no-brainer.
Yeah. They own the Premier League. Like, they've got their B team and their team who don't get to play. Just sit chill.
Wait until I tell you that now for entering the World Cup and for making it to the group stages as they did, I think the payout at a group level was something close to $1 billion that's going to go back into that club. So any guesses? Oh,
they're
going to
have a DE and F team now.
Yeah. I mean, like
Kaiser Chiefs is like their F team.
Yeah.
My little team is like their Z team.
So yes, all clubs were represented at this Club World Cup, and Bank of America was a lead sponsor there. The Public Investment Fund in Saudi Arabia was another lead sponsor there. So it's clearly something that has garnered a lot of attention. Look, to be honest, I, having been a Chelsea fan as long as I have, I didn't think we would win. But this is very much a reminder of like what happened when we won the Champions League. Because on the way to winning that Champions League that very season, we beat Barcelona in like the quarterfinals with a Fernando Torres goal that no one ever forgets. Because, well, really, I don't think there's anything else to remember him by at our time at Chelsea.
I went to a Chelsea game once.
Really?
In Chelsea.
I got this from Stamford Bridge.
My brother lived in Chelsea.
Yeah.
Brother-in-law.
Uh-huh.
We went to
before he moved to France.
Correct. This was 2000 was when I went.
Oh.
And
okay.
they were smashing cars afterwards. And I'm like, I'm the South African. I must go speak to my brother-in-law's like, no. We just go home.
We go home. Yes. I had the privilege of going to Stamford Bridge a couple of years ago for, I was in London at the time and I happened to be in London. It was a very chance event that allowed me to go see a home game. I think the game was against Crystal Palace, and when I was there, I picked up the shirt at Stamford Bridge. So very special shirt.
That's true. Oh, that's right. Who were we playing? I can't remember. I have no idea who it was. Yeah. I just remember that his parking garage in Chelsea that he had for his SRK 350, which he never drove. He employed some kid to drive him to work every morning because the traffic was horrible. His parking garage was more than like my net worth.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. David loves the show. Lovely to have you on the show, David. Sorry it's on a Tuesday. Simon only got back from KZN yesterday. And apparently we like Tuesdays more than we like Mondays.
Yeah. I like a Tuesday.
Tuesdays feel better.
Because otherwise, like, you hit the Monday, like the week starts. And, like Tuesday is like a gentle easing.
It is. Yeah, it does feel more relaxed.
I like a Tuesday.
Yeah.
Tell the folks to vote for Tuesdays.
We're voting for Tuesdays. But yes, let's get into some market matters.
Markets,
what we do. It's been quite a busy time since we've last had our sit down. Markets have been quite volatile. There's been up and down conversations around the tariffs that are going to be implemented come the 1st of August. At the same time, OPEC has come out to increase supply. That's given the oil price a bit of a concern around that $70 a barrel level. So a lot's been happening, and we're about to kick off US earnings season.
Yes.
It just gets busier and busier.
Yeah, I mean, look, U.S. earnings seasons, like you just got over it, like the headache's starting to fade, your eyes are starting to work.
The trauma's starting to go.
And then it's all back again. And it starts big. I mean, we've got all the banks, not all the big, so it kicks off with banks. It used to kick off with some aluminium company. Remember that?
What happened to that?
No one cares about them anymore. Anyway, so now it's all the banks are coming. And that's going to be interesting to see, particularly because people like Jamie Dimon can't avoid having stuff to say and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So it's going to be interesting to see the results and the commentary around it. And of course, this is second quarter to end June. So it's April, May, June. So it is that 3-month window. It was a wild window. The banks with trading activity, probably stellar number, right? I mean, collapse at the beginning of April, recovery back to all-time
highs.
Fantastic
stuff.
They are making money hand over fist.
Yeah.
I'm interested what they're seeing. So like the more boring banks, the Wells Fargo's, Bank of America, who are more sort of traditional types of banks. What are they seeing? Are they seeing any stress? Are they seeing, you know, just all the stuff we look for in our local banks, you know, in terms of non-interest revenue, debts, impairments, all of those sort of numbers.
So do you think we're looking for inflation, I mean, interest rate cuts? Because last year we hoped for 9. We've lost hope this year. I think the tariff conversation has thrown probably the biggest spanner in the works, according to Fed Chair Jerome Powell, wanting to see how that's going to impact into the markets. These numbers, we're going to start getting things like
forecasts.
We've
got inflation this afternoon.
Yes, we've got US inflation this afternoon. That'll then give us an idea. But also with the earnings, we'll start to get forecasts from the companies around how they're seeing performance going into the second half of the year. Do we even think that we might see interest rate cuts?
No.
Or have we just given up?
Yes. I mean, inflation 2.4, expected today 2.7. That's a big number. Now, I mean, it was what, 9 and change back at its peak, but 2.7 is a big number. It's a big move in the wrong direction. Now, we'll see. We don't know. It's coming out 2:30 our time. We'll know more then. But it is a big move in the wrong direction, and it's exactly what Jerome Powell is worried about. It's exactly what the concern around tariffs is. But another interesting factoid, I was at an Ashburton event earlier in the year, and one of the guys, the US offshore, who's Ashburton's US people?
City? Possibly City.
anyway, smart chaps, always smart chap. And he says, what you got to understand is that US businesses, not the banks and stuff, but your more traditionals, your Amazons and the like, etc., are sitting on record margins, your Pepsis and everyone. They are sitting on record margins because during the inflation, they pushed margins to, you know, manage them. And then they were like,
we can just leave them here.
Well, maybe we could pushy a little more. And then, so they're sitting on record margins. And he made the point that, you know, that kind of justifies earnings and current valuations rather, but where does that go to next? Now, what's the story? Do we expect record margins to get more recordy or do we expect them to contract? The latter, obviously, and that starts to impact valuations. Do we see, and to be clear, the Liberation Day tariffs were gone, but everyone had a 10% tariff and the US has made $100 billion this year from tariffs. Do we start to see the trickle down in the sense of they're absorbing some? You know, if you're sitting at a record margin, you want to keep market share, do you take some of that tariff and say, well, we'll get the supplier to take some if it's an international supplier. We will take some and we can pass some on or not. So we start to get a sense of what corporate America is going to be doing with tariffs at this point. And to be clear, this is 10% tariffs, not the 50s and 40s and 30s nonsense, which apparently happened while I was on the beach.
Yeah, so that's tariffs for certain countries. South Africa is not looking the best in terms of that. There's a 30% reciprocal tariff that was announced by the US that we're apparently still trying to negotiate. There's a 25% tariff on automotive vehicles. There's 25% on aluminium and steel imports. I think that would be also affect chrome exports out of South Africa. But effectively, there's still the 10% tariff for being BRICS aligned, because apparently the BRICS bloc is considered anti-American in its policies.
So the BRICS one is interesting because the BRICS, so all the others are 1 August kickoff, except when Trump was asked if it was firm, he said absolutely firm, but not 100%. Okay. So, but the BRICS, it doesn't have a date, it seems. So, and it's weird, like Brazil, because so their president did what Trump did, was try to overthrow an election. He lost. The difference with Brazil is they threw the oak in jail because that's not cool stuff to do. In America, they put him back in the White House and gave him immunity by the Supreme Court because, well, hey. But, so he's like, yeah, but if you're going to do that, like you can't, I mean, like he's meddling in internal affairs. And weirdly, they have a trade surplus with Brazil, so it's all very awkward. I expect nothing to happen on the 1st of August.
Around the world?
I mean, so there will be a little bit, but he's going to pull it back. I mean, so firstly, our 30% tariffs like exclude everything of import, not the motor cars, but like our minerals and stuff, etc. So it's basically going to be some citrus. I actually had an interesting chat with a chap this morning. We actually have a bunch of South African companies operating into, I mean, Ultron and Datatech and others who are operating into America, and 30% tariffs just puts them like no more business. I mean, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So it starts, but I can't, I mean, surely he's going to walk them back, although he's going to have to walk them back individually because Liberation Day was like, everyone gets a tariff. And then he like, nobody gets a tariff. Here he's going to have to, I mean, he's thrown it on Japan and was it Korea, which are his two biggest trading partners? Not the two biggest, but two of the biggest trading partners. I mean, this stuff is. Yeah,
you can't make this stuff up, eh? You can't. Oh, I thought this was going to be messy, but my word. And we still have to get into the big, beautiful bill in our deep dive where we try and make sense of what he's doing there. I think the consensus here is quite clear, is that from a policy perspective, it's chaos everywhere that relates to the US. Mm-hmm. And the taco trade continues to play itself out in that the president does always chicken out. But I had a conversation around the G20 yesterday as well. And the fact that Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent isn't in South Africa at the moment with the other central bank governors and all of that is a clear message from the United States around how they're viewing South Africa's G20 presidency. And that then also then speaks to whether or not they'll show up in November for the gathering and the handover over to the United States. Now, a lot has been said around that, around whether or not we should be pandering, we should be negotiating, we should be having these conversations. And I had quite an interesting conversation yesterday with a B20 Sherpa in Uncle Kaz Kuvadia, formerly of Business Unity South Africa. And I asked the question.
What did you call him, a Sherpa?
Yes, that is an official title for the G20. A Sherpa is a representative on behalf of a head of state or a government in the G20 that represents the national national interests of the person that's appointed them. So within the B20, as the B20 Sherpa, he officially represents South Africa and is appointed by the president, if I'm not mistaken,
to
do that. Sherpa is an official title. Learned that.
Did learn something.
Yep.
Okay, we are learning.
We're learning. This is learning time. So very interesting developments there. But that conversation was around, do we need the United States to continue with G20 conversation? And yes, they're 15% of the global trade. But the important point that was raised was there's still the other 85% of countries around the world that want to get things done. And we can't be held to ransom by what the United States wants. Now, that's something the United States is not going to want to hear ever.
If you're going to be the petulant kid and like cry at the whole birthday party, at some point you get locked in the closet.
And you ruin the birthday party for everybody.
Exactly. Or you get sent home. I mean, America is the global economy, make no mistake. It's, 25% of GDP, 15% of global trade. But if you don't want to play nice, what must we do? So South Korea and Japan, or Japan and South Korea, respectively, fifth and sixth largest trading partners of America, both just suddenly got these giant trade things. I mean, okay, 25 and both 25%. How do you play nice? I don't know. The G20 without the US is just a weird idea. I mean, it really is. It's like having a birthday party and not inviting the hot kid. But having done that, I mean, if the hot kid's like, I'm just not coming, and if I do come, I'm going to pour the punch in the pool or whatever the case is, well, then you uninvite them. And then we do get to an interesting new development, sort of G19. Maybe we go and invite somebody as number 20, I don't know. And we kind of like say, well, okay, we need to go without you because, I mean, the invite is there.
Mm-hmm.
You're not taking it up. What must we do? Or go home now because you don't want to play? No, we play without you. And this is the risk that Trump takes, is that, trust me, Japan and South Korea are like, yo, okay, so this is an important market for us, but they don't want us. Where can we look? And where are they looking? Europe, Asia, China. And this is going to take time. But in 10 or 20 years' time, if the Trump-esque sort of policies out of the US has continued, we're going to have a fundamentally different trade world. That's not, and it could end good or bad. I mean, I don't know, but it's going to end bad for America. I mean, we know where it goes for them, but for the rest of us, we'll see.
Si, do you think, and this has just come up now, do you think the United States has overestimated their importance in the global economy, in the global world, because of where they stand now, considering where they stood in the past? There was a time, granted, 15 years ago, even 20 years ago, happy days, the world couldn't do much without the United States. There's very little globalization, very little internet and kind of collaboration in digital spaces. Since then, we've had things like remote working, a COVID pandemic that's forced us all to unmute ourselves on Zoom and Skype every now and then. But what that's done is it's shown the world that the world is different to what it used to be. And do you think that's now put the United States in a position where they still think they can rule the world as if it's the 70s and it's no longer the 70s?
I think yes. So I don't think they've overestimated their importance. I think the US is the most important economy in the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, that, no doubt about it. What they've overestimated is other countries' willingness to bend the knee. I also think that they frankly haven't. Other countries are in many cases willing to bend the knee within reason. You tell Brazil to stop doing rule of law, I think Brazil's like, no guys, that's a knee we can't bend. You come to South Africa and tell us you've got to cancel BEE, that's again a knee we're not prepared to bend. But if you come to South Africa and say you can't, I don't know, put an import duty on whatever it is we're buying from the US, there is where we are. So I think they've overestimated their ability to get countries to bend the knee. And there certainly are pain points that America can claim, and particularly with China in terms of trade, but there certainly are pain points, and there certainly are, Europe does it to us, for example, with citrus, where they won't take our citrus because of black spot or something. And you speak to Wandile Shilobo and he's like, no man, come on, this is completely bogus. This is in essence a fake type of trade barrier that's been put in the place. There's a lot of conversations to be had. Trade is not the fair flowy thing it should be. The problem is it's not so in many cases you can't bend your knee because these are like these, Say what you will about BEE, it's the law of the land and the ANC and the parliament is not changing it. So pick your battles. The problem is you pick your battle and then you change it 4 minutes later. It's like, oh, we're going to fight here. And then you get there with your pistols at dawn and the Oak's over there and he's got cannons. And it's like, yo, I mean, it's that. It's the, and more than anything, and it comes back to, you know, international trade and international everything is about norms. And we didn't, we underestimated how much it's about norms and people just behaving themselves. And Trump's come along and said, nope, not doing that.
Well, that's going to put an interesting conversation on the table for the next couple of years, effectively, if we start to see the shift. And I get that the shift might take a bit of time, but if you're sort of rocking the very foundations of international trade this violently, and you start to look at organizations like the World Bank, like the IMF, where historically America has wanted to rule and impose and, you know, almost influence quite heavily what happens at those organizations and institutions, as they do with NATO and other regions. And then you start to say, as you say, you start to see countries say, but we're not going to bend the knee. We do remain sovereign states of our own.
Happy to have conversations.
Yes. Mutual respect starts to become something. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that is in the vocabulary of the White House at the present moment.
And for example, the copper story, right? So 50% tariff on copper. America imports about 45-50% of its copper because there isn't enough copper domestically.
Why would you do that?
Well, you do it because you put a 50% tariff on and suddenly it makes copper in the US so much more viable, right? That mine that you've mothballed, will you go and unmothball it? That greenfield that wasn't viable is now viable. Except that when you do it today, like no CEO woke up the next day and thought, let me go and spend 13 years making a new mine because you don't know that it's going to be there by the weekend. Never mind 13 years. There's other ways of doing this rather than the sledgehammer.
Okay, so let's keep with the copper example for a moment, right? So you go, you unmothball the mine that you do, you mine all the copper. Mm. The only way you have the offtake is if you have the local manufacturing capacity. Because now if you export to another market, your export cost is already higher than the rest of the world.
So you
right?
need so to use it internal.
You need to use it internally. Fine, great. If you're going to use it internally, you are now then saying to the Apples and everybody else that you must bring production home so that this copper mine that we're now going to unmothball can feed into that ecosystem, right? Correct. Yet the big companies aren't doing that and you're not going after them for that.
Correct.
So you're not forcing them to bring manufacturing home. You're saying we want to make America a home state, but I'm not going to go invest into unmothballing an asset that's going to take me 25 years or something to run for a president that's going to be around for 4.5. That doesn't make sense.
Still more than 1,000 days.
Are there
other ways to do this? Are there not ways to go to the copper industry and say, here's the deal. We'll guarantee you a floor. Mm-hmm. We'll guarantee you, I don't know, what do they do in America per pound? We'll guarantee you $6 a pound. Mm-hmm. End of story, no questions asked. Under certain T's and C's. Much like they did with the Chips Act, where they said, you know what, if you go come and build a chip fab in our country, we will help you pay for it. We will help you. We will give you tax clearances, et cetera, et cetera. Go to the copper industry and say, we need to double production of copper in this country. Mm-hmm. To which folks would say, look, we can do it, but at this price and at this stuff.
It needs to be viable for everybody.
You say, well, cool. Okay, so you need to unmothball that. It's going to cost you $100 million.
Mm-hmm. Here's a subsidy.
He has $100 million.
Because we've happily given subsidies for...
Or any copper that comes
for Tesla.
Out of... any copper that comes out of that mine, we won't... There's no tax on it or something.
Other incentives.
Are there ways to... You know what? But that's like a very, very long tweet, although I see he's doing some long tweets now, as opposed to just 50% on copper, you know, nice and big fingers. It's the nuance. So are there ways to do it? Yes. Is there an argument to be said it would be better for America if they had 100% of their copper internal? Sure, sure. Is a 50% tax a thingy-majig going to do it? Not a chance. The problem is even further, the Chips Act, so the Republicans want to roll it back. So you don't even get that level of certainty. And that's the problem, is that every 4 years, so you've basically got between now and the end of Trump's term, and with Trump, who knows, but let's pretend he doesn't wake up and change his mind ever. So you're now going to say, okay, so we've got until end of Trump's term. So you're going to mine like crazy, but you need that incentive. And the tariffs don't work. In this case, in some places they might. Here, it is fundamentally wrong. And I love your bringing in with Tesla. Mm. America essentially created an EV market that was a global leader for a long time. It's now China's the global leader, but it's a global leader. And it was Tesla, but there were others in that space too. There's a lot of EVs in America now, and it was done by subsidies. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that's terribly socialist and stuff, but what the heck, it worked. You want to great. Do you want to double your copper market? Subsidies, not tariffs.
You know what? That brought two questions into mind. And we're going to wrap up the conversation. But one of the questions is possibly going to be another conversation around what sorts of incentives and other measures should we be looking at for our own local economy? And I think that should be a deep dive as well, because there's so much that we could then be doing for our own economy, taking pages out of things that have happened around the world. But this is the question I want to leave this conversation on. Do you think, Sai, that Orange Mussolini is a finger typer or an elegant...
Come on. If he's typing, and I suspect the man doesn't type. He doesn't have a computer. He's got people who do it for him. But then I do wonder on his phone, how do you finger type on your iPhone?
Well,
he's got a Max. He's got a really big iPhone. And the man is a finger typer.
Okay, there we go. That's the note. That's where we're going to leave it. That's Market Matters. Stick around. Of course, the deep dive and the investor insights will be out later in the week. But for now, thanks, folks, for tuning in. Thanks to our community for joining us on live chat. Shout out to our TikTok community. We're going to get into the deep dive. That's Market Matters. We move on to our deep dive. We are diving into the one big, beautiful bill, Trump's triple Bs. We're going to see if we can make sense of it. Unlikely that we'll get to a reasonable conclusion considering where it comes from, but we're going to try nevertheless. Let's perhaps start, Sai, with an overview of Trump's triple Bs.
It raised the debt ceiling by $5 trillion and raised deficit per year between $500 and $700 billion per year between now and 2034.
So debt ceiling goes up to $40 trillion US dollars, but we're fine with it because out of the last... I think, if I'm not mistaken, the United States has raised their debt ceiling 94 times? I'll get the quick numbers.
Okay, well, you get the quick numbers. Here's the problem. They expected to then hit that new $40 trillion ceiling within the next 2 years, which means Trump's still in president, but he might not control House. He'll still have Senate. Senate will still be Republican, but he might not have the House, which makes things quite messy.
Okay.
So there's a $5 trillion increase to that. It's basically going to increase the deficit. So not much this year, but in 2026 by $500 million, rising to $730 billion by 2034. However, many of these are, you write this bill and then you make stuff not permanent because that has less of an impact. Because the office of the, who goes and checks it, and now I can't remember what their name is. Anyway, there's a bipartisan office that sits within Congress who then goes and says what the impact will be. But if it is the CRB estimate, CBO, I don't know what they call. Anyway, they go and check, but they don't count the ones that are set to expire. So technically it's like, it'll increase deficit by $630 billion in 2027, but by 2034, it'll only be increasing it by $400 billion. That's if it's allowed to lapse. Now, if you remember, Trump's big, beautiful tax bill in 2018 was all supposed to elapse this year, and of course he's kicked that can down. Now, his plan was to do two terms and to leave that for whoever was doing this term, because he would have termed out. But then
he would have done 45 and 46.
He lost 46, so he didn't get, shot himself in the foot. So there's a lot here. There's a lot of tax cuts. I mean, there's some good stuff here. I mean, we were talking around in the earlier segment, we were talking around the Tesla stuff, right? Well, EVs, the 7,500 exemption for EVs is gone end of August. Bang, just no more. Now you get is a auto loan interest deduction of up to $10,000 of annual interest on loans between 25 and 28 for vehicles assembled in the US. So what he's trying to do, that's essentially the 7,500 you were getting, right? Mm. And Tesla gets that, right? Because they are assembled in the US. There are some others, Ford, GM, Chrysler.
Well, some Fords. If you're driving a Ford Ranger that's assembled here and shipped there.
With a 25% or 30%. There's some T's and C's. But certainly he's trying to stimulate that economy. And this goes back to our earlier conversation. There's cleverer ways to stimulate rather than tariffs.
Mm.
There's, child tax credits have gone from 2,000 to 2,200 deductions on tips, etc. It's not, to be clear, the problem with America these days is that you're either on this side or that side and you just hate each other and you can't even agree that chocolate is good. I mean, like you couldn't even agree that chocolate is a gift from God. card.
Okay.
So you know, and there are things in this bill which aren't all bad. I mean, there's a 1,000 rand credit to a child born in the next 3 years. The parents can add some cash to it. That's clever. That's innovative. $1,000 is not a hell of a lot.
Yeah, it's not a lot.
There's also a lot to rich people. Mm-hmm. You know, your estate duty has gone up to 30 million for a married family joint declaring, and gets inflation adjustments. Inflation adjustments are new, and I think inflation adjustments are correct. There's a lot of sneaky stuff, like the cuts to Medicare and Medicaid are not direct cuts, although they are in some places. What they're also is significant increases in admin. Mm. And in many cases, that's just going to be too much of a burden for people, particularly people who are, you know, homebound. And it's, for example, it cuts back on care visits. Care visits are hugely important for people who are, you know, Alzheimer's, bedridden, etc., etc. So it's some tricky stuff there as well. And then there's, you know, the estate can now apply for, there's 70 billion put aside to build detention centers for undocumented immigrants. Mm-hmm. 70 billion to build detention centers seems to come at the wrong way of trying to solve that problem. You know, and it comes, to be clear, immigrants to America apply for less state resources, commit less crime. It's like I was saying the other day, you know, when I'm driving my car in France and I see a robot, I start slowing down in case it changes color because I don't want to get pulled over by a Frenchman in a foreign country and have to explain. When I'm in Joburg and I see a robot, I accelerate.
You're okay.
And we're hitting this thing hard. So, you know, and it's also quite clear, as Trump has discovered, that a lot of these immigrants, documented or not, are like really doing the jobs Americans don't want.
Mm.
You know, working in clothing factories and all of that sort of stuff.
Keeping the economy moving where, well, again, you also have the challenge of a very low unemployment rate in the US. So it's not as though...
And no one wants to do sub-minimum wage jobs.
That's it. Especially not US citizens living in their own country when somebody else is willing to do those jobs. Fun fact around that debt ceiling, in the last 66 years, from 1959 to now, has been raised 90 times. 90. Not
so
one
more
nine.
Than once a year.
More than once a year if you do the math.
This is like performative mumbo jumbo.
So effectively, what we've concluded around the US debt ceiling is that it doesn't matter. But do whatever you want with it and you raise it if you need to.
So how did this many big bees bill thingy-majiggy? So the plan is, so Trump came in and his problem is deficits and debt, right? Those are his twin problems. And the question is, how does this solve these twin problems? Well, it goes back to Reaganomics and the theory of trickle down. The trick is that we've had 40 years of Reaganomics and we can quantifiably prove that trickle down is a lie. It's not even a myth.
It's a
just,
lie.
It's just a lie.
Yeah.
You know, and so some of it, yes, the interest exemption, that's clever. That's quite cunning. There was also a EV credit on secondhand EV. EVs, that's gone, but whatever. That's quite clever. The trickle-down part is that you're going to put more money into people's pockets and they're going to spend it. That happens at the poor end. It doesn't happen at the rich end. Mm-hmm. And most of the tax cuts are happening at the rich end, not the poor end. Notwithstanding, that data shows that the tariffs at 10% across the board, and they're going to probably be more, that takes $22,000 out of a US taxpayer's pocket over their working life. So they're poorer from that. There's a lot of moving parts, juggling balls on what Trump's trying to do. This is part of it. I think this part, there's some good things to it. Largely, I think it sucks.
Can we just address the fact that we've just kind of skipped over, which again is an implicit assumption at this point from the United States and from everyone dealing with the United States, they've increased their defense spending.
Well, defense spending...
That was never going to be off the table, I suppose, whether you're Republican or Democrat. There's the one area they commonly agree.
Particularly if you've actually finally, after 50 years, got NATO to adhere to their defense spending commitments, you'd think that you could start...
Scaling back, right? Right. So no, you've increased your defensive spending. The Pentagon is now going to spend, I think it's around $1 trillion US dollars. And for context, I don't know if we've done that on the show, but for context, for those that don't understand that, the top 10 biggest nations that spend on defense in the world, America, obviously, number one. The countries that sit between position 2 and 10, cumulatively. So that means when you add up all of their defensive spending as nations, still don't arrive at the amount that the Pentagon spends themselves.
as one nation.
And fun fact, of those remaining nine, mm-hmm. seven are allies.
Of America.
Yes.
So they're never going to wage war against no. America. And the ones that are not allies being the other
China
two,
and
China
Russia.
And Russia. Those are obvious, right? So China's military spend or defensive budget spend, Russia's defensive budget spend, America's seven other allies collectively mm-hmm. don't spend more on defense than the United States does. And we wonder why there's so many wars in the world. It's not because America's starting them, it's because they're saving everybody. Let's move swiftly along. Let's keep it moving and let's look at some of the contradictions in this big, beautiful bill, right? On the one side, as you said, big tax cuts. So yay for tax cuts for the rich, but you're increasing deficits and the deficits are going to affect the working
class. And the 10-year is now back above 4.4.
Mm-hmm. So the market is looking at that and saying, risk. This does not make sense. Why are we going into this, right?
Which is why he wants to file Powell, but carry on firepower.
Fire Powell, because Powell seems to be too sensible for what he's doing. Some of the other contradictions, you are, as you said, supporting working families by supposedly improving some of those conditions there, which again, great idea. Then why remove some of those safety benefits like Medicaid? Why tamper with the existing safety nets that are there for those working families to benefit from as well? So one has to wonder at this point, and we've touched on some of the others like the energy and the climate change things. It's very clear Donald Trump has no interest in preserving the climate because he's announced and instructed people to keep drilling. So that's something else, right? But why then do you put this forward as the greatest thing to happen? I suppose it's in Trump
because
fashion.
It's Trump.
So yeah,
to be clear, the man does a dump and it's the best dump the world's ever seen. I mean,
that's fair. No, that's fair. So the big beautiful bill in itself. The tax cuts don't make sense unless you're a top earner. The clean energy doesn't make sense unless you are...
He wants cheap energy and he likes old school energy because it's easier to do.
Yeah. Right. So we're going... Well, this is also evidenced by the fact that America has left the Paris Accords and the Paris Agreements and they're not interested in reducing their carbon footprint anymore.
Correct.
So that's one side of it there. Defense, we've spoken about. Low-income households, we have spoken about. The debt conversation, we've spoken about. Where then... Or why then do you just try and throw everything into one bill? Is it because you only have one chance of getting things approved? Like you said, the moment you start to lose control.
That's a good question. Maybe, and maybe it is that. Maybe it is a case of one bill, you can whip everyone one time, but if you have lots of small bills, it just gets so much harder to have to whip people into place. And I mean, whip as in parliamentary whip, not as in whip.
Well, it's Trump. It could go either way.
It could go either way. So you're essentially therefore, yeah, so you're trying to manage the process and get it through one time. You can also hide things in it, right? Because so there was there was stuff in there which people didn't like, but they signed anyway because they're like, well, I like 90% of it. And so you can cram in stuff that people don't like. And there's been a fair bit of things that have been crammed in which parties on both sides don't like. Here's a fun fact. Since Trump came into office, three Democrat House people have died because they were very old. If they hadn't died, he wouldn't have got the vote because it's three votes that would have voted against the bill and he passed it by two.
No, they died of age. That's the official report, and that's what we're sticking to.
We're sticking to it
because we're not going to get into the ramifications I wish I didn't know that information, but it is much like the conspiracy theory around MH370, which we will not get into, because that's another wormhole that we'll dive into at another time.
Hey, there is that one airplane that got flown out of an airfield somewhere in Central Africa and has never been seen since. Some folks literally walked up to an airplane, jumped and whooped off into the sunset and poof.
Disappear. Huh.
Yeah.
New definition or new meaning to the word riding off into the sunset. But as we conclude this big, beautiful bill or whatever it is that we're going to be calling it, the financial impact of that bill is quite serious, is quite clear, is that it's going to make things worse before it makes things better. And when it makes things better, it won't make things better for everyone. It'll make things better for some people. When you are one of those people and you intend on retiring, I would also want a more flexible tax regime so that my $400 million private jet is not taxed as a gift from another nation. And perhaps I have a more flexible structure there. So it's very clear that we're setting things up for post-retirement and post office life, but at the same time, it's to say that the friends that have gotten suddenly wealthier overnight now have a bit more wiggle room on their part. Americans are by and large happy with this because there's been no uproar, there's been no fight back, there's been no protest from an American point of view around what's going on.
But I mean, I take your point. There is, but it's also, so what Trump does is very clear. He sees things in red and blue, and it's quite simple. Red is lovely and blue must die, which is not how America was always, like Biden did it. His infrastructure bill went into red states, Republican states, mm-hmm. because they were the states that needed. Trump does the opposite. Like he doesn't care. He's just, because of that, you know, you're either with me or you are devil. And that comes back to my earlier point, right? They can't even agree that chocolate is lovely.
The big, beautiful bill and the fact that Republicans and Democrats cannot agree that chocolate is God's gift to mankind. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Stick around. Investor Insights is up next. We have quite the stock pick to add to our wall. And we wrap things up with Investor Insights. We're taking a look at the latest visa changes made by the Department of Home Affairs in an effort to make South Africa more easily accessible. And we're adding something to our wall. The Department of Home Affairs announced the electronic travel authorization system. Hopefully we're moving into e-visas, right? Alongside that, there were two specific visas that were mentioned by the minister, and that was around the stages visa, which is ideally a visa aimed at production companies, media companies, and filmmakers to come make more films here, because apparently there was some filming that needed to take place here. Visas didn't happen in time and we lost out on some revenue.
Yeah, Tom Cruise did some of Mission Impossible out of Hoodspread.
See? So we are pretty much that movie destination. We've got the space for it anyway. The other one was the Meets visa, which is essentially for conferencing, meetings, gatherings, all of those sorts of things. Easier visa to come into the country for that, which is a good thing. So I happen to think that these two focus areas make a lot of sense for trying to drive traffic in and out of the country. The question then becomes, with this new electronic travel authorization and the visa setups, does it make it more secure? Because you're still trying to address the conversation around illegal immigrants in South Africa, not undocumented foreign nationals, whether or not Home Affairs is up to date or not. And we're trying to gradually digitize our Home Affairs. We've been talking about things like a digital smart ID card. We've done the smart ID card thing. We're looking to phase out the green barcode of things. But
you're never taking my green barcode ID book. Just saying. Because it's from 1980 something. Man, and I look young and strapping.
We're going to find a picture of that. We're going to find a picture of that 1980s ID card and we're going to see what it looks like. But yeah, from a Home Affairs perspective, wanting to digitize our Home Affairs system is great because I, for one, and I know many South Africans have, we've joked about it so often, but the reality is many South Africans are tired of hearing that the system's offline. And if this brings us one step closer to a system staying online, that's a good thing. But also when you look at the global trends and you look at where we sit globally, I mean, you can land in some countries and get an e-visa on arrival.
Yeah.
That means you can fly into that country without a visa, and by the time you walk through the airport, they've vetted you, checked you, everything's done. And
you swip your credit card.
That's it.
And things like the meets and the movies, that's clever. Because those are easily verifiable. You come into a conference. Well,
Where's the conference? Is there a conference? What's your accommodation look like? All of those things.
Is easy to do. Right. And I know, I mean, and it's usually the other way, but Africans struggle to get visas for some European events and American events, et cetera, et cetera. And it's not even always based on color. It usually is. But my sister, who is, you know, as white as I am, like she struggles sometimes.
Yeah, because she's from South Africa.
Then she gets a letter from Ban Ki-moon and everything's fine. But it's no longer Ban Ki-moon. But it make it easy. So, I mean, my sister-in-law and brother-in-law who live in France, they like to go away because when winter comes, it's horrible. So they go and spend time around pools and beaches. And they pretty much have two requirements. Direct flight, no visa. Now, they're on French passports. So the visa part is quite easy. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they can fly into South Africa, ching, ching. You know, if there's a place they want to go to and it says need visa, they're like, not going.
Not worth it.
Not going.
Just not worth it.
We're so used used to the visa process and the humiliation and the fees and the garbage that's done. But to the rest of, not to the rest of the world, to much of the rest of the world, certainly the developing world, this whole visa thing to them is like, no, not happening.
And it's also now with I mean, something interesting that I saw was around strength of passports. So there's a passport survey that's done by the likes of Henley and Partners. But at the same time, just a simple thing, like when you look at the colors of the passports, red and blue passports often have a much easier time traveling than green passports.
This is like beer bottle.
Yes.
No, green is premium, brown is not, and white is, I don't know.
Unfortunately, in this case, green is not premium. Blue, I think, might be, no, red might be the strongest in terms of colors, and then blue, and then obviously
we
green.
We should make us golden.
We should, but that's a new tender we don't
can
need.
Can I do a quick story? So this is 1997-ish. I'm traveling on a train from Prague to Budapest, overnight train. We've got our new passports that have got some UV light and stuff fancy on them. The Border Patrol people get on the train. He looks at my passport and he says something in a language I don't understand, Hungarian, I suppose, and gets off the train with my passport.
Oh.
I have never been so. It turns out he was just wanting to show his buddies because he had never seen a passport like ours because ours were very innovative back then. He just wanted to show his buddies. Me.
Slight panic. No. Ever so slight.
Big panic. Sorry, carry on. I like this.
Oh.
So you know what this does? More than anything, with no respect to every other Minister of Home Affairs we've had, which goes all the way back to Mangosuthu Buthelezi, who to his credit did do our current public holidays, and I do like our current public holidays. However, why did we have to wait for a DA finance Minister of Home Affairs to do this? Is that an awkward question we should save for another day?
Yeah, let's...
Okay, not beyond the ambit of this show, but just like you note what I'm seeing, right?
It does start to look
a certain
way. When
the Oak's been there like
a
year and some change.
That's it. So okay, I think we take the win for now.
We'll take the win.
That benefits South Africans 110%. The conversation around whether or not it should have been done sooner, absolutely.
Fair.
The conversation around whether or not we need to renew driver's licenses every 5 years when we could be doing it every 10 years.
Oh, no,
like
you haven't
people.
Met my mother-in-law. We should renew those every 6 months. She was on the road with a valid driver's license and the number of rubbish bins that jumped out at her was alarming. And to be clear, rubbish bins don't jump.
They don't jump. But I do think, though, then that we should be looking at things from the perspective of streamlining things for South Africans as well, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
If you are a non-South African and you want to be getting your passport renewed or those sorts of things and you've got permanent residency, yeah, there might be due diligence and checks and balances that have to happen there. But if you've been in South Africa for the entirety of the 35, 45, 50 years of your life, you've never left the country, why are you still suffering to go through the simple things that you have to go through as a South African? And I guess that's the frustration that we've been getting with the Department of Home Affairs in its entirety. So to be able to see some of these changes happen is a great thing.
Yes.
It's a good thing.
And we had been doing some of it. I mean, my driver's license, which was before the printer died, when I remember going
the
in...
The one printer that exists in the country.
And I got it within like 10 days. I remember applying for a passport at one... You know, when you go to the bank branches. And I went in the Monday and I got an SMS on Thursday to come fetch it. And I'm like, this must be a mistake.
And you showed up and they gave it to you,
and
right?
They gave me, they said, you must be here at between 10 at 10 o'clock. I mean, truthfully, they tell you know, so a bunch of you arrive for 10. So I only got seen at 10:45. 45 minute wait for our Home Affairs is called winner, winner.
It's a win.
Steak dinner. I mean, so we have been, and that was Melissa Gagaba, I suspect.
He was Home Affairs Minister.
I think
he brought
that in.
Yeah, the
actually,
banks.
We've had some weird ones. Kusazana Dlamini Zuma was a Home Affairs Minister, wasn't she, at a point?
Yeah, the list of Home Affairs Ministers we've had in the past is quite a lengthy list, but that is the nature of cabinet reshuffles in this country, is that they bring about many, many ministers. We take the win that is the electronic travel authorization system.
Love it.
I think the one parting thought here is, can we now get on par with the rest of the world in that we obviously, as a world, I'm glad we've discovered this as a globe. We have an issue with the fact that you're charged for a visa and then denied a visa. So you're charged for an application that is potentially successful, potentially not successful, and we need to review that at another time. But the other conversation, and we've had this conversation before on the show around the fact that just because we are from Africa does not mean then that we should be getting visa'd. And if you're coming to Africa, we have the right to impose visas on you the same way your country imposes visas on us. So this seems to be a win. This seems to be a good thing, and something that'll encourage growth and positivity in the economy from the things we're looking to attract. Let's hope then that we can manage it properly, that it remains efficient, because those are the challenges, right? It's the implementation part of it. And implementation beyond the 2026 local government elections, please. Implementation on a long-term basis. But that's where we're going to leave that conversation. We're going to put a pin in that, because we do need to get to our wall. This is something that, again, folks, if you're new to the channel, this is not financial advice. Read the disclaimers. Listen to the disclaimers if you're listening to the audio podcast. The disclaimers are at the beginning of the show and at the end of the show. But this is a gentle reminder. We do not do financial advice on the show. This is what we like. This is what we're looking at. You can completely disagree. In fact, we'd like it if you disagreed, because then we'd like to know what you consider something that's worthy of putting up on a wall. For this week, we're adding a stock that has a market cap of $1.5 billion. It was founded in 1977 by a Stanford graduate student named Roy Raymond and his wife, Gay Raymond. And the stock, we recently discovered, is tradable. Cy knew this a lot longer than I did. I recently discovered this.
By about 5 minutes.
By about 5 minutes. The stock's ticker code is Victor Sierra Charlie Oscar. Now, I've been building up to this long enough. It's Victoria's Secret. Nobody knew they were listed, but apparently they are in the US. You can trade Victoria's Secret as a stock. Cy, how do you determine the fundamentals of a lingerie company?
So you know what? There are some things that are good for lingerie companies. Increase in divorce rates. No, when you get in divorce, now you got to get a new partner, you're buying lingerie and stuff.
Or the lingerie companies are the cause for increased divorce rates.
Now you see. So maybe that's the problem. Okay, so that one didn't work. Does Tinder and stuff? No.
Because, I suppose so.
No, because he's so busy swiping it. But maybe your profile pic.
Yeah, but
I've
my
never
pictures.
Been on Tinder. What do you wear on a profile picture in Tinder? Is it a full body shot?
I don't know. But hopefully you're not wearing it with the price tag so people can see that you got it from Victoria's Secret. But this stock does bring into perspective something quite interesting. When we look at things like the strippers index that they have in the US that determines the strength of an economy, when economies are likely to go into recession because of discretionary spending and all of that sort of stuff, this kind of stock perhaps for me comes into that space as well, around discretionary spending would likely increase the spend on these sorts of companies. I mean, for the quarter ended April of this year, they had about $1.35 billion in revenues as a business. They beat estimates on the revenue part. They beat estimates on the earnings per share part. They're likely to be reporting quarterly numbers pretty much in the next couple of weeks as well. But the question then still remains is, how do you then determine whether or not this is a good value stock and a good buying opportunity?
So they have some active investors getting involved. Barrington Capital, who have a 13% stake, etc. So I'm asking Claude, my favorite GPT. Positive social trends are inclusivity and diversity. But brands that celebrate body positivity and diversity, I don't know, wellness and lifestyle focus. Rejection of hypersexualized marketing is a badge of changing consumer skepticism.
Fun fact, Victoria's Secret dominates influencer mentions and social media followings online. So if you look at their digital presence and how many people still talk about the brand, that from an online perspective puts them as one of the top brands in the world, or potentially in the United States. Now, of course, that might not necessarily translate into revenues, because I mean, if you're looking at May revenues, sorry, that $1.35 billion was for May 2025, not quarterly revenues.
Yeah. So they did $6.2 billion for estimate for the current financial year.
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, they did about 11.8 billion rand in annual revenues. So if they're at about six now, perhaps we call it a 10 billion rand per annum company. That's still quite a big market from their perspective.
Debt of 2.8 billion is a lot, but not if you're doing 6 to 10 billion.
No, not even that much, hey.
Short positions, 15. Yo, okay.
Yeah.
Just some stuff. I mean, so EV sales is 0.7. Price to books, 2.3. Yeah. PE is kind of middle of the range.
There have been some calls for the board to be overhauled amid some losses that the company's been making. So that's not the best space for them. But from a company perspective, how much do we like the stock?
There's so much about it that just
that doesn't make sense.
It's also ultimately, no disrespect to Victoria and her secret, In lingerie is a commodity, surely.
Surely. And well, it depends. What's the context?
Well, I mean, so lacy stuff to be worn under garments is a commodity. Now, I can go and get the bottom end of the range and buy cheap stuff on Temu, or I can go to Victoria's Secrets. And I suspect there are people who make Victoria's Secrets prices blush because theirs are so much more. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it's one of those deeply elastic in terms of demand comes and goes.
Fair.
And if you're under pressure in terms of your pocket, like it's out the door. Mm. And if it's not out the door, you can go and buy the cheapo or the, you know, the Victoria's Secret or whatever's in the middle or whatever's the higher. I mean, how much? So that's why the influence is interesting, because then it does to a degree come to brand. Mm. Now, are the influencers being paid or are the influencers native? In other words,
they genuinely wanting the product.
They like, this is just epic.
Yeah, yeah. Very interesting. I think the thing you raise about the elasticity part of it is quite an important thing, because that now also puts into question your revenues, your margins, those sorts of things. I mean, at the moment, profit margins are slightly on the negative from a net profit perspective. They are improving, but again, if you are elastic and you're deeply cyclical and you are sensitive to your consumer and all of that, that kind of risk means then that in down cycles, you're not going to make a lot of money. You're probably one of the first discretionary spends to go.
If we see unemployment tick up, and to be clear, we haven't. But if that does, I mean, when you lose the job, the last thing you're going on the way home to tell your partner you lost it, maybe you are to try and soften. They've never paid a dividend. I mean, my daughter source says, sorry, something went wrong when I tried to find a dividend for the stock. So there's no dividend out there. I am struggling to wrap my head around it. I mean, I get what the business is.
Yeah.
I'm struggling. So weirdly, if I look at analysts' consensus, there's actually two sells and a strong sell out of 11. You don't often see sells, never mind strong sells. There's one strong sell on Berkshire, and that's just someone who's trying to make his name. But
and for context on those strong sells, the 52-week high is just shy of $50. Mm. The 52-week low is around $13, just under $14, or at about $19. In 2021, this stock was trading above $70. So we are at less than $20 on a stock that isn't likely to look to tick up. The highest it's been recently was kind of those December highs of the $48 or so. It's just been on a downward trajectory for this this year, actually. We're halfway through the year. I think we should avoid it.
Yes, this is surely, I know we're getting hooked up on the Victoria and her secret part, but surely this is just good old-fashioned consumer discretionary spending.
That's it. And that's what it comes down to.
Hence, we back avoid it.
There we go. We know where we're putting it. We don't really like it.
That was a surprising mind bender.
Perhaps if Victoria does tell us what her secrets are, we might review our position on the stock. But for now, it's going squarely in our avoid section. And that's where we're going to leave that particular note. Before we go, we, of course, are going to leave you with an unfiltered opinion. That is something that we do. But before we get to that, I want to put something out to our community. And perhaps this could spark some conversation. Mandela Day is coming up this week.
Mm.
And
Friday.
Yes. And the country's greatest ancestor for the moment is someone that we continue to celebrate, is celebrated throughout the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's an opportunity to do a lot of things from a community perspective. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't be that one day that we do those community things and we do those 67 minutes and all of that.
Correct.
It should be constant community engagements and working together within our communities. But there was a time where we had this conversation around Madiba Magic and Nelson Mandela, and it fueled so much positivity and all of that. How do we have that continue to happen in South Africa without needing to pin it to one gentleman, without needing to pin it to one? I mean, as South Africans, it shows that we're capable of being that positive.
The lazy answer is sport.
And it's not, you say it's the lazy answer, but it's not, because if you watched how full Qabecha was over the weekend when we beat Italy.
Italy. Mind you, Qabecha, not a lot happens there on a Saturday. But sorry, Qabecha, I've been there. I've spent a night in a Saturday. But that is lazy in the sense that it's just a group of people, 15 rugby players, 11 cricketers, 11 soccer players. It's lazy in that regard. But there is something there. I mean, we win the cricket stuff. And, you know, I remember the 95 World Cup victory. But just as clearly, I remember all the others as well. I mean, you know, the 07, the one last year, the 2019. I mean, that is one of the things that fundamentally removes the differences, whether they be class, race, gender, or whatever, of South Africans. But is it enough?
Mm.
I mean, the answer is, I mean, maybe we just need Bafana Bafana and Biyana to come to the party, because we're doing it, right? We're winning stuff all over the place, but we're like sitting here all depressed and worried. And because it can't be our politician. And I like your point. It can't be one person. Because yes. While you were saying it, before you said it can't be a person, I was saying we need a dynamic, amazing leader. But we had that. And then, you know, they step down at some point and then they pass away at some point.
The continuity is needed.
And we need a better continuity.
Mm, mm. We'd love to hear your thoughts on that, folks. We'd love to hear how we continue to nation build, not building around the legacy of one individual, because he himself said to us that this country needs to be built on more than one individual. But that's a conversation for another day. We're going to leave you with our unfiltered opinion of the week. And the unfiltered opinion of the week is...
So I've just done a lot of driving, Durban and back, all over the place. Worst drivers in South Africa are eThekwini, but there is a proviso, Ford Rangers. Man, Ford Rangers. If you are driving a Ford Ranger and you say you're not a bad driver, then you must sell your Ford Ranger and buy another car, because a Ford Ranger driver is the worst driver on the roads of this country. That's all.
Do you perhaps think that that could be because you drive a smaller car than a Ford Ranger? Or,
dude, I drive a smaller car than a Beetle. I'm but smaller than every the smart. You know the smart,
smart
car?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm bigger than
you're
a smart.
You're bigger than a smart car.
Well, only lengthwise, not heightwise.
So Ford Ranger drivers are terrible drivers. Ford Ranger drivers out there, do better.
Do better.
Do better. That's the unfiltered opinion of the week. If you've missed the conversation, folks, tune in. We'll make sure that we keep you up to date as we can. Until next time, investing isn't hard. Let's try it. The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.